Maybe it's important that people understand that their entire life, the oil is around you everywhere. I would urge you, look around you right now in the room you're in. You may have a television. Oh, look at that plastic all around that TV. Well, that's oil. That comes from oil, you know, the computer monitor I've got here. Oh, my telephone. Look at that petroleum base. Everything around us, virtually everything around us is petroleum based. So if we don't have oil, we're going to run out of a lot more than just gas in the tank, aren't we, Richard?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, even if it's not made out of oil, chances are it was delivered to your home one way or another by a cheap oil.
Well, it's unimaginable being without oil. Unimaginable. I would like to take some questions from my audience and sort of intersperse it with our discussion, if that'd be all right.
Sure.
Let's try it. First time caller line, you're on the air with Richard Heinberg. Hi.
Yeah, first of all, my name is Phoenix, and may I say it's an honor to speak with y'all.
And to you, sir.
What I was wanting to ask him was, according to Tesla's writings and everything, was electricity, are you able to broadcast it like a radio wave?
All right. You know, my guest is not going to be qualified to answer these sorts of questions. You may have researched it, Richard, in which case you're certainly welcome to give it a try. But there were rumors that Tesla had invented a way to transmit electricity through the air, you know, all that sort of stuff. I'm sure you've heard it.
Right. Yeah, actually, when I talked earlier about being at the U.S. Patent Office researching patents, it was Tesla's patents that I was researching.
Uh-huh.
And, he did definitely find a way to broadcast power. Now, whether it was going through the atmosphere or going through the ground was never clearly established. He had to discontinue his experiments because he ran out of funding.
Mm-hmm. Well, we all know that when he died, the government rushed in, grabbed all the documents and writings of Tesla and has kept them basically secret. And people, of course, imagine that he had the answer to the world's energy problems, and the government's hiding it away. I personally don't subscribe to it, but one never knows.
Right. Well, there may be some interesting secrets being hidden away related to Tesla's discoveries. But if he did discover an infinite cheap source of power, it doesn't appear anywhere in his patents. I can say that.
All right. You've done that much of a search then.
Yes.
In all the things, that's very interesting, actually. In all the things that Tesla did patent, nowhere did you see a free source of energy. Nowhere did you see a patent that describes a tower that rises into the air and plucks from the atmosphere power that would drive our cities and our vehicles.
Right. His broadcast energy system relied on conventional energy sources to produce the power. In other words, hydroelectricity and
mm-hmm.
so on.
All right, very good. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Richard Heinman. Hi. Or Heinberg, I'm sorry.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Hi, Richard. Thank you so much for this topic tonight. I'm Neil, calling from Pacific Northwest.
Okay, Neil, you're going to have to shout at us. You're not too loud.
Okay, a little bit better.
Much better.
Thank you, sir. I'm reading out of the Muse Letter, this month's publication from Richard Heinberg.
A subscriber to your Muse Letter.
From the March edition called Götterdämmerung, he brings up some very interesting points that one is that our economy is being undermined from a lot of borrowed money, and the energy crisis is symptomatic of the whole borrowed energy, borrowed money syndrome. And I'm wondering if Mr. Heinberg has a different model, a different social model. I was lucky enough to go overseas and live as a military dependent when I was a juvenile and then again as a soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the European system, which was, gas was $4 or $5 a gallon, and people used mass transit more. They still do. We haven't adapted that model. We probably can't adapt that model just because of our social things. You did mention the earlier points, Richard, which were farm your own food at home, something I strongly believe in, walk whenever possible, use less fossil fuel, use less energy consumptive. But my question is, what social model could you pick out of anywhere in the world? She say they're doing it right, or they're doing it so well. And the other question is, why has our government, our current government, made such a colossal failure, not only of wasting our money, but of wasting all the energy?
All right. Last one first, I guess.
Ooh, well, that's a lot. A different social model, that's a tough one to address. One thing I would say is a different monetary model could help a lot. Right now we have money that is essentially created by banks and in the process of making loans. And that kind of money, fiat paper, well, it's not always even paper, it's usually electronic money, carries interest. Because it's the only way it can be created is through the making of loans.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of that, the economy has to continually grow or the whole system will collapse. Because if the economy doesn't grow, if more people aren't taking out loans, then there won't be the extra capital to pay back the existing loans with interest.
Mm-hmm.
And when we've seen historically when that happens, the economy doesn't just go on in a steady state, it collapses. It has happened during the 1930s. I'm afraid we're entering into a historical period where conventional economic growth, as I said earlier, is not going to be possible because there won't be the cheap energy to fuel it. So what we really need is a different kind of non-debt-based, non-interest-based money to enable our economy to continue. One of the tragedies of the Great Depression was that people still wanted to work. The factories were still there. They still needed all the same stuff that they needed before, but there just wasn't the money available to enable the system to run. I think the same thing is possible in the very near future, where we may enter into a deflationary kind of spiral where there just won't be the money, the capital available to enable the system to run. So one thing I think we need is a different kind of monetary system.
Well, I don't know how you do that without paying back the present debt. And when you look at those numbers and the rate at which we're actually increasing that debt right now...
it's horrendous. Yeah. Yeah, it's not an easy thing to solve. And again, I don't think it's likely to be solved before we actually arrive at a crisis situation. But when we do, I think it'll be important for there to be models available.
Are you enough of an economist or would-be economist, Richard, to forecast when that crisis, when we're going to have the gates come tumbling down there?
Well, I'd shy away from making any specific predictions as to dates, but it may not be that far away because the levels of debt in the U.S. right now are just unsustainable.
They're incredible. Yeah. Absolutely incredible. However, I suppose from a historical perspective, Richard, in some ways, you have to give credit to those who have managed our economy so far. They have put us in a sustained period with little ups and downs of the most prosperous, continuously prosperous period of time that almost anybody's ever experienced.
That's right.
So, in a way, they've done pretty well.
Yeah, except that for the past couple of decades, we've basically maintained that degree of prosperity by borrowing from our children and grandchildren.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I know, but still in all.
We have benefited. those of us who are sort of in the baby boom generation especially, we have lived during the most prosperous, wealthy period of time in all of human history.
The champagne years.
We've enjoyed it and we've used it up. It's been a great party.
But you can clearly see the first guests beginning to go home, huh?
Yeah.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Richard Heinberg. Good morning. Hello. Going once. Going twice. Gone. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Richard Heinberg. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, this is Terry.
Hi, Terry.
I wonder, I work at San Diego State University, and we have developed a hybrid electric vehicle that we developed it 3 years ago, and it runs on biodiesel also, but it gets 80 miles per gallon, and it was made with off-the-shelf components.
Okay.
Which means that the car companies could have done this. We
Absolutely.
Built this car 3 years ago.
Right.
I was wondering if I could give the website so people could look at it.
It's not on the air. No, you can't,
no?
actually. No,
okay.
We have a rule against that. But if you want to send me an email, we can get, if it's interesting,
okay.
we'll get a link up, okay?
Well, the thing different that's different about it is it's 260 horsepower. It's 60 horsepower diesel and 200 horsepower electric. And... Hello?
Yeah, we're listening.
Oh, okay. Okay, so it's 200 horsepower electric. And it it's a two-seat sports car that weighs 2,800 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And we have announced on the radio here in San Diego, or on TV, that we're going to drive it from San Diego to Daytona Beach, Florida, on one tank of gas on the 4th of July.
Well, I wish you certainly all the luck in the world.
Yeah,
why,
so do
why,
I.
Why do you think that the Ford Motor Company or, I don't know, somebody of substance hasn't knocked on your door and said, hey?
But, you know, that's the strange thing. We showed it off in Sacramento at the EVAA. It was EVAA back then 3 years ago. And we had it at the Michelin Challenge. We competed in the Michelin Challenge.
Well, that's quite a bit of exposure.
Yes, and we've actually, you know, it's funny. The Japanese, when we drove it to the EVAA meeting in Sacramento, the Japanese just kind of all in unison turned their head and looked the other way.
And to what do you attribute that?
I have no idea. Bob Lutz actually talked with us about it. He was there.
All right. Well, that'll lead to, I guess, a bigger discussion. Richard, let's assume for a second what he's saying is all true, and they have this vehicle that can do exactly as he said.
I hope so.
Why would you imagine that anybody would turn their head, the Japanese or the Americans or anybody else for that matter? Why wouldn't somebody immediately grab onto that? Ah, the future, profit, money, let's rock.
Right. Well, I can understand the American car companies doing it just on the basis that that's sort of their standard operating procedure. They've let slip all sorts of opportunities to increase energy efficiency of their fleets. But the Japanese, that's harder to understand because Japan, we have to remember, is a country with no indigenous energy resources. And so they're much more interested in energy efficiency than the Americans are. By the way, there's already a European car that gets 90 miles to the gallon, and that is the Volkswagen Lupo, which is a diesel car. It's a small car. Unfortunately, it is not exported to the U.S. because Volkswagen says that there is no demand for it here.
No demand. Well, earlier we were talking about American car companies churning out these SUVs. I don't fault them. I don't fault the American car companies at all. The American car companies have, you know, if they want to stay in business, they have to produce what people want.
They want to make a profit. That's certainly true.
Well, they want to make a profit. Everything's profit-driven, and the American people want big cars. And so it's not their fault. They have to produce what people want, or they won't be in business. How do we change the minds and the hearts of Americans to not want the SUV, instead to want the thing that gets 90 miles per gallon? If we could change their minds and hearts, we'd have it.
Well, I think two things could be done. First of all, if we could take away the subsidy that's being given to SUV buyers by the federal government and change that to a subsidy that is directly related to vehicle efficiency, that would certainly help. Then if the American public, the world for that matter, could be alerted to the fact that, in fact, energy resources are limited and that we are necessarily going to have to restrict our appetites for abundant energy and become more efficient. You know, right now we have the most effective propaganda machine in the world here in the United States. It's called the advertising industry.
Oh, yes.
People base their behavior on what they're told.
Mm-hmm.
I think we pride ourselves, particularly we intelligent people, that we, you know, we don't pay attention to the advertising. But it's effective. Otherwise, billions of dollars wouldn't be spent on it. So that propaganda stream needs to be altered. It needs to be telling us in some ways almost exactly the opposite of the message that it is giving us now. The message we're getting now is buy, consume, waste, like there's no tomorrow. And the real message is if we continue to buy and consume and waste the way we are now, there will be no tomorrow.
All right. Well, I'm going to be honest with you, and I was being honest with you when I told you 90% of the time I'm driving a Geo Metro. But out in one of my other garages, Richard,
mm-hmm.
I have a Firebird Trans Am. That baby kicks butt. And I remember Super Bowl a few years ago, 1998, actually. And in it, they debuted this Firebird Trans Am. And my mouth hit the floor. I fell in love with that thing and the power. And, you know, I've got it out there. I don't use it very often. But every now and then, Richard, I want to get out there and I want to feel that mama take off. I want to be pressed back in the seat. I want to feel the velocity, you know. Fun car. That's what it is. And frankly, I don't know how you get people to give that up, Richard. I have no idea. And it's going to have to happen, isn't it?
Well, ultimately, it'll just be too expensive for any but the very wealthy to be able to afford that kind of experience on a regular basis. So, well, you know, it's like I said, it's been a great party, and in some ways, I think it's worth enjoying as it winds down. What we have, I mean, the automobile as art form, sure, I can appreciate that.
Yes, there is that, and so how much? Even though the first couple of guests may have wandered to the door and be on the way out, the party's ending. For how much longer can we have a general expectation of the party rolling on?
Well, in terms of normal life as we're used to it,
yes,
probably not that much longer, because the natural gas crisis is beating down the door right now. We've only averted a really serious in-your-face natural gas crisis.
10 years, 15 years, 20 years?
Oh, no. We're talking about within the next 2 or 3 years with natural gas.
What?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
What'll begin to happen in 2 or 3 years? I mean, will... What, it'll be so expensive you can't afford it, or what
electricity, for example, will become more expensive. We're generating a lot of our electricity through natural gas, mostly through coal, but we've ordered about $100 billion worth of natural gas-fired power plants over the last few years.
Uh-huh.
And because, of course, natural gas burns clean, and we were told that there were limitless supplies of it. But now that natural gas production is declining rapidly in North America, there's a real question as to where all that gas is going to come from to generate the electricity.
That's right. All right. Gotcha. All right. Hold on. We're at a break point here at the top of the hour. Trouble on the way. And, you know, I thought he was going to say 10 or 20 or 30 years. But really, the next 2 or 3 years, well, I don't know. Then what kind of attitude do you have? Get out there and have a blast.
Trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue, clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903.
That's such a pretty song, isn't it? Good morning, everybody. My guest is a realist. He's Richard Heinberg, who's written a book called Party's Over, The Oil War and the Fate of Industrial Societies, and it's something we're going to have to face up to. There's no question about it. It's coming. It's here. And soon, it'll be gone. Wonder when we start planning. Richard Heinberg, once again, The Party's Over, his book. Richard, your book, The Party's Over, in your book, in what way did you lay it out? Was your main intent exactly that, to have your readers understand the party is really over? Is it documenting that, or does it go forward into, you know, in other areas like where, or all areas, how people can conserve themselves? And by the way, I have questions wanting to go further than you did with the, you know, the personal advice.
Right. Yeah, I try to do all of that. You know, it's not a pleasant message. It's a it's cold water in the face.
Yes.
Is what it is.
It certainly is. Yeah.
And so I emphasize that with the title, The Party's Over. I want people to know that this is serious news. And we like good news, but sometimes the bad news is more important to hear.
But you are aware of the fate of messengers of
civilization. Yes, unfortunately.
Yes. Uh-huh. So far,
I've managed to avoid that fate.
Have you? Well, yes, but I'm sure, in a literary sense, I bet you've had people come and attack you for this.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I've gotten some pretty nasty emails.
I bet you have. Well, what's the matter with you? Don't you know there's more oil than man can ever use out there?
Yes, worse than that, actually.
I can imagine, actually. First time caller line, you're on the air with Richard Heinberg. Hello.
Hello, Art. Hi, Richard. This is Ahab. I'm calling from South Bend, Indiana. Listen to you on 890.
All right.
WLS out of Chicago.
Yes, sir.
Well, I got to tell you, this, I'm pretty hot to talk to this guest tonight because this is my favorite topic.
Okay.
We are insane in this country. I mean, everything that you're talking about, we've known about since the 70s. Yet the country has not done what it needs to do. We just keep, you know, we're just so, we've had this lull of low prices, and, you know, we haven't had the motivation or the leadership at the government level to start decentralizing some of the local electric grid power so we don't rely on all these huge plants.
Well, I don't know that enough of the audience is old enough, but some will be, to remember. We did indeed. We had this crisis, and people began to change the way they think and the way they acted, and all kinds of things happened back during that gas crisis, but boy, did we forget about it fast. I mean, whoa!
Well, it's almost, I mean, it really, the behavior of the industry in terms of supply and pricing, I mean, it makes me believe every conspiracy thing I've ever heard. I mean, it's almost like as soon as we got on track to getting away from petro-economy, they cracked the valves open and dropped the prices down, and everybody kind of forgot about everything. The tax credits on renewable energy expired. They didn't get, you know, Congress let them lapse. I mean, I've got a 25-year-old Grumman, a stainless steel solar water heater that still works to this day. And, you know, but who in their right mind is going to spend a grand on a water heater, even if it lasts 25, 30 years? It's still going great. I don't know how long it's going to last. Mm-hmm. When you can go to, like, any big, you know, appliance depot-type place and, you know, get a gas water heater for, you know, $200. The government has to get behind and put some incentives so people will make, you know, good choices for our long-term benefit.
The government is us. And look at us. You just really pointed out how well all of us recovered as though the party's never going to end. Once, you know, the lights went back on, we just started singing where we left off.
And it's like we have collective amnesia.
Yes.
As soon as those dollars start to drop at the pump, you know, and the prices got back down to like a $1.20 a buck out here, everybody started getting the behemoths again.
We were back in biz.
Right. And I'll tell you, I've spent most of my career in professional commercial horticulture. And there are many, many callers, I'm sure, that could back me up on this. Good old-fashioned ag school crossbreeding has already produced some killer fuel seed crops that grow on transition soil, marginal soil that were not in use now. I myself have witnessed some of Michigan State's test crops up in Michigan here, just north of me, where they had a whole field of 25, 30-foot hemp plants that grew in one season that were just like a giant tree the size of a small apple tree, solid seeds.
Yes.
Now, you tell me, marginal, marshy land where this stuff grows without even any fertilizer,
yeah.
You go out there, crush the seeds. I'm not saying it would solve everything.
No, you really do raise a good point. It makes you want to believe every damn conspiracy theory out there.
It does.
And what about you, Richard?
Yeah, well, needless to say, I agree with everything the caller has said. We've suffered from really the curse of cheap energy in a lot of ways. I mean, cheap energy has given us amazing mobility and freedom and power, but it's also made us addicted to a way of life that is ultimately unsustainable.
Oh, you said it. I mean, thank you. Thank you for somebody saying it. I mean, we are just no better as a nation than some crack addict, busting into people's cars to steal some money to support their habit. Now we can't support our own energy habits, and we got to send our boys and girls all over the world now to go kick ass and make sure that the pipelines keep running.
Yeah, we better face up to it, because that is what we're doing.
I mean, it's so sad and it's so unnecessary when all the know-how is here. I mean, like that guy that called before. My God, there's Art. I mean, I know that you were around in the 70s. I mean. Chrysler had a little duster that they replaced half the body parts with aluminum and put an aluminum block in it.
Right.
The thing was a 74 duster, what they called it, like a fuel miser or something. That got 36 miles to the gallon.
Sure.
With early 70s technology.
I know.
And it still weighed like 3,200 pounds.
But again, the government, thank you, caller, you're a good caller. The government is us. They're not really much different. They represent us and what we want.
Right.
And so we're the ones driving this. And same deal with the car companies. They wouldn't sell what we don't want because nobody'd buy it. So it's us driving this. That's what we've got to get through to ourselves, that we are driving this addiction, and they're just the suppliers, you know.
Right. And we need good information on which to base our decisions. You're right. In a sense, the government is us. But we're going to make bad decisions as long as we have bad information. And right now, I think most of us, most Americans, assume that, cheap oil is our birthright. That's what we've been told.
Birthright. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Richard Heinberg. Hi.
Okay, is that me?
That's you.
Okay, this is Randall. I'm a truck driver. I'm calling from Coachella, California.
Yes, sir.
And since we're talking about oil, I'm a dinosaur. I drive a truck. I'll do 130,000 miles a year. I'm working right now. I pull off the side of the road so you have a good connection on my cell phone here, Art.
Thank you.
I have logged a gazillion miles in the last 9 years listening to you and now, of course, George Norrie. I own one car, a 1967 Buick Skylark with a V8, and I've got a bigger V8 sitting in the garage waiting to go in with a positive tracker in, and I love being slammed in the back seat.
Yeah.
I don't drive it very far.
See, we can't give this up. Plus, he's a truck driver. I mean, as a truck driver, when you hear Richard saying the things he's saying, how do you feel about that?
Well, I have a feeling after many years of listening to you and also just where I'm going, hoping to go spiritually, none of this that he's talking about, and the last caller, I love the guy. You know, the truth of the matter is, he's right. This nation is a nation of addicts of more than one kind.
Mm.
And the bottom line is, without a spiritual awakening, it isn't going to happen unless, and this is my question for you, Richard, do you believe that the only way this is going to happen is what we've talked about, or I should say you have talked about, is we're going to have a big reduction in population. Mm-hmm. Because you alluded to it earlier. You said nature will take care of it. Well, we're not going to stop, you know. And
well,
if you look out here right now tonight, there's, you know, hundreds of trucks going into California to deliver, and there's hundreds of thousands of us doing this job.
Totally.
How are we going to get the food?
That's right.
Well, look, first of all, Mother Nature doesn't get angry. She gets even. she evens things out. And I'm afraid, which do you think it'll be? Do you think we will first learn to modify our ways in profound manners, or do you think that nature will foist upon us a balancing act resulting in, you know, 2 or 3 billion people less?
Well, quite frankly, I think it's going to be a combination of the two. I doubt if we are going to make the kinds of drastic efforts that will be needed short of necessity. And that necessity is probably going to come in some pretty nasty forms. Beyond that, I dread to make more specific predictions, except to say that I think your caller is absolutely right, that there's a spiritual dimension to this, in that, spirituality has a kind of ethical dimension to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as we awaken to the fact that we are dependent on a force greater than ourselves, namely the Earth, we will find that the ethical path is a kind of eco-ethics, where we acknowledge that that the Earth has its own consciousness, its own rhythms, and we are here to serve that rather than it to serve us, ultimately.
Hmm. And you see this kind of transformation taking place among the American people?
Well, as I say, it's going to be a process, and I do see hopeful signs. I mean, you know, I'm a college teacher. I deal with a new crop of students every few months.
Uh-huh.
And you know, I don't have to take very long explaining all this stuff to them. They get it right away.
Okay, but still, if you were to examine the life that those students of yours are leading right now, would that be consistent with them getting it?
Well, maybe I'm fortunate in where I live and the students that get attracted to New College, but most of the students that I have, I think, are already on the path. Maybe they're attracted to my program because they already have this sense. But they know that the world is about to change in profound ways, and they want to be out there in front, leading that change rather than having their lives destroyed by it.
Very good. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Richard Heinberg. Hi.
Hi, this is Tom, Lafayette, Indiana.
Hey, Tom.
WLS.
Right.
I just wanted to add to the conversation that just this last week, Ford came out with a new gas-electric hybrid. It's called the Ford Escape, and it's an SUV.
It's an SUV. Well, let's see. That's what people want. Well, how does it do? Do they have any
Well, they're
mileage?
Claiming 60 miles to the gallon.
Oh, well, that would be serious.
And they also have an Escape that's just plain gas. You know, no hybrid.
Right.
And they say the hybrid's only like 2,000 to 3,000 more than the plain gas one.
That's pretty interesting.
And they're expecting to sell all of them that they can build.
I bet they will. Now, leave it forward. You think that's right, Richard? Have you heard of that?
You know, I haven't heard this. I knew that they were planning a hybrid SUV, but I hadn't heard the announcement that it had come out. So,
well, if they've got an SUV that'll get 60 miles to the gallon,
that's true. It's good news.
They would have a really serious seller.
Yep.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Richard Heinberg. Hi.
Hi, my name's Elaine. I'm on the Oregon coast.
Hello, Elaine.
I wanted to know what ever happened to the Brutalis engine.
The Brutalis,
it was a Brayton cycle engine, a constant pressure engine.
And what did this engine do?
It could burn biomass. Somebody said earlier something about hemp plants, and the designers said, well, I wonder if they could finally find a use for kudzu or scotch broom.
That's a good idea.
Did you have you heard of that, Richard?
You know, that's something I haven't heard of. There are so many of these things, you know, different energy efficiency devices, different kinds of motors and so on out there. What we really need, I think, is a blue ribbon commission to look at all of the energy alternatives, everything from nuclear to solar thermal and solar PV, and evaluate all of them across a range of consistent and transparent criteria to see what we should be investing in. Because we need to be investing not just a billion here or there, which is what the current administration is doing, but literally hundreds of billions of dollars in this energy transition.
Have you been asked to testify in front of Congress?
No, I haven't. I have spoken with local government and also members of the House of Representatives, a couple of senators, but I would like to get the message out as to as high a level as possible.
Hello there. You're on the air with Art Bell and Richard Heinberg. Good morning. Where are you?
Hello, Art.
Hello.
Yes, I'm in Columbus, Ohio.
Okay. Welcome.
How are you tonight?
I'm just fine. Welcome to the program.
Great. Thank you very much. I'm a first-time caller. My father and I both listen to your show and a lot, and we listen to George. And the reason I'm calling is back in the 70s, I was about, during the gas shortage, I was about 16, 17 years old. And my stepfather, he owned some oil wells in West Virginia. And the government at that time and the company, I'm not going to mention it, the oil company that he was selling oil to, they subsidized him at that time to quit pumping oil. And also, I don't know if Richard knows much about that, but also they do the same thing with crops up here in Ohio. They subsidize farmers not to grow corn and that type of thing.
Yes.
And I know that for a fact, too.
Okay,
also, no,
well, that's right. Richard, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I can't. I have no knowledge of that specific situation.
Well, they do subsidize farmers to just leave
yeah,
land.
Definitely with agriculture. But the question about the oil well in West Virginia, I don't know about that.
Right, but gee, Richard, if they subsidize farmers to not grow stuff, you were saying we were already at the peak of yeah. agriculture, right?
Right.
That doesn't make sense. Why don't you stop the subsidies once you get to the peak?
Right. Well, the problem is with distribution. We actually produce enough food to feed everyone, but the problems of distribution and economics keep it from getting to the people who need it. So it's a complicated situation, and of course there are a lot of marginally producing American oil wells where it actually costs more money to get the oil out of the ground than the oil is actually worth.
So in other words, they will begin to pump that oil at some certain price. All of a sudden, it's going to be magically profitable for them to bring it up.
Right.
Right.
But then we're talking about very expensive oil.
How expensive? In other words, if there's a capped well down in Texas or Oklahoma somewhere right now,
right?
When do you expect they'll rip the cap off?
It depends on the particular well. Now, you know, maybe when oil gets up to $40 a gallon, well, that's or $40 a barrel rather, that might be the trigger that would enable that particular well to be produced. But we may be talking about a well that would only produce, you know, 5, 10, 20 barrels a day. You know, there are literally thousands of wells in the U.S. that only produce a few barrels a day.
Boy, I'll tell you, Richard, your message is pretty chilling. it really is. I mean, when you begin to consider the implications for not just this country, but the whole world.
Yeah, I mean it to be. You know, I'm not a morose, gloomy character myself. This is not something genetic or personality.
I've got that.
This is the information that we need to hear.
Yeah, I think that I've got that. Richard Heinberg is my guest, and I think I do have it. The Party's Over, his book, you might want to read it, Oil, War, and the Fate of Industrial Society. societies. Us. From the high desert, in the middle of the night. You're listening to Coast to Coast AM.